Hello and welcome back to another episode of Podcast DX, the show that brings you interviews with people just like you whose lives were forever changed by a medical diagnosis. I'm Lita.
I'm Ron.
Jean Marie is not with us today. Collectively, we're the hosts of Podcast DX. On today's show, we're talking with Seth Castle about PTSD or post-traumatic stress. Seth retired after serving 16 years in the military. His career included a position as a company first sergeant and was deployed to Qatar, Afghanistan, and Iraq. He has been married for nearly 10 years now to his wife, Julia, and has two daughters, Reagan and Kennedy.
Seth wrote the book, Why Is Dad So Mad?, to try to help his children understand his PTSD. And he has also written two books in the Why series to try to help other children with parents who have post-traumatic stress. Seth resides in Kansas, where he's a professor of leadership studies at Fort Hays State University. You sound like a very, very, very busy individual. Seth, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today.
Hey, thanks so much for having me, guys.
It's wonderful.
Let's jump right into it. Could you tell us what post-traumatic stress is?
Well, PTSD is a lot of different things for a lot of different people. And, you know, I wrote these books based on my experiences. There's a lot of different ways that PTSD can manifest itself. Basically, it's your body and your mind's reaction to some adverse traumatic event that you've been through.
Okay.
Sure. Can you tell us how post-traumatic stress has affected your day-to-day life? And when did you first notice it was affecting your relationship with your family?
Yeah, so, you know, I was deployed very early in the war. I actually left in January of 2002. I went to the country of Qatar, and then April of that year, I went forward to Mazar-e Sharif, Afghanistan. You know, came home for about 4 months, and I was deployed. Again, I went over for the invasion of Iraq, so we left home, you know, in January of 2003, and I was in Iraq until April of 2004, and, you know, at that time, we came home and just kind of went about our lives. And, you know, I knew that I didn't know how, but I knew that I was different when I came home. And, yeah, I can still remember, like, where I was standing in the lovely thing my wife and I lived in at that point in time. I still remember where I was standing. We were having a fight, like one of 1,000 fights that we'd had in the first 6 months after we came home. And I remember feeling something in my chest, and I didn't know what it was. I knew I'd never felt it before, and that was, you know, in my books, I talk about PTSD as being a flame inside or a fire inside of Dad's chest, and that's really kind of what it feels like for me, and that's something that would grow and have a more and more monumental impact on my life and would, you know, almost cost me everything. Until I don't know, I guess I'll just chalk it up to divine intervention if I had the foresight or the hindsight to take a step back and see that I needed to go get some help or, you know, or I was going to lose everything. And so I went, you know, it was 2004 when I came home, when I first like really realized something was different or something was wrong. And I didn't go seek help until, you know, over 10 years later.
Wow.
Well, we're glad you did.
Yes, for sure. For sure. Thank God.
Yeah.
Seth, is PTSD something that you and your troops learned about prior to deployment or while you were actually deployed?
No, definitely not. You know, and that was, you have to take into consideration how early in the current conflict we were. You know, things like PTSD or TBI, like, those were not topical conversations that were happening. Reintegration of service members when they came home was not, that just wasn't anything that was thought of because we were so early in the conflict. So, you know, I didn't even know what PTSD was when I came home. I didn't know what the VA was or how to go and access those resources. To be, like, completely transparent, you know, when I left, I was 20 years old. I came home, I was 21. I went back when I was 21. I was 23 when I came home. the second time. And, you know, I didn't, even if they told us about that stuff, like, I wasn't listening. Going through the demobilization stuff, like, you know, we went home to Fort Carson, Colorado, and, like, we had, like, 4 days there, and then we just went off to the Four Winds.
Okay.
And so, like, I just wanted to get on with my life. So even if they did, like, I was 23 years old, like, spent, like, 2 years overseas. So I don't know if that was even a part of it. I don't think it was, but even if it was, like, I'll own my piece of it. Say, I probably wasn't listening. I just was ready to move on with my life.
Sure.
Okay, that's understandable. I'm wondering if we would get a different answer if we asked people that are deployed currently or more recently, for instance.
You know, I think you would, just because the conversations are more topical now than they used to be. I know the military does a lot with taking care of reintegrating troops and stuff like that, and facilitating. They have the Yellow Ribbon Reintegration Program that, you know, the whole purpose of the program is to help service members reintegrate with their families when they come home. They also have single soldier programs. And I think mental health is taken a whole lot more seriously now than in the military than it was maybe 10, 15 years ago. That being said, you know, that stigma still exists. I mean, pride is a huge part of going in and, you know, swallowing your pride. It's a huge part of going in and taking that first step. And I think that stigma still exists. Even though we're a lot further than we used to be, I think we still have a long ways to go.
Definitely, definitely.
Were treatment options offered to you after deployment?
No, I mean, I can't say the treatment options were really offered because there wasn't ever really conversations about anything that you would need treatment for. So, you know, I came home in 04, you fast forward to 2014, after I'd been struggling for a long time. And what really, like, made it okay for me to go seek treatment was, I remember, like, one night I was at a Halloween party with some of my friends, like, all guys that I was overseas with, and, you know, lots of alcohol and everything else, and, like, I had a bad night. I had, like, a meltdown that night. Like, one of my buddies, that he was, you know, he was my platoon sergeant overseas. Like, he's the person that I credit with teaching me how to be an effective non-commissioned officer. Like, we had deployed together both times, went through the invasion together. You know, he had deployed twice after that. And so this is, you know, several years later, this is probably like 2010 or so. And like that night, like, him and I were spent a long time talking, and he told me, like, you know, after my third deployment, I had to go start seeing someone and talking about this, because I was just losing my grasp on everything. And it was like, you know, that was a man that I looked up to, and he was the pinnacle of everything I thought you should be as a professional and a soldier. And, like, him telling me that he had to go seek help, like, that made it okay for me.
Yeah, I'm sure that by him saying that, it kind of helped ease the stigma for you.
Yeah, because, you know, you don't want to admit that you can't handle your stuff. Like, the military is pretty much a hyper-masculine culture, and, you know, like, you want to think that you can handle this. You always look at the other side, right? Like, oh, I know people that had it way worse than me. You know, I was, at this point in my life, I was a drill sergeant. You know, I was surrounded by combat arms guys, and, you know, guys that fought the Second Battle of Fallujah that really went through some rough stuff. And, you know, I'm like, oh, they're fine. Like, I should be fine.
Right.
Like, everything should be fine. And everything wasn't fine.
Right. Well, everybody's different. Know? Yeah, absolutely.
Right. I remember I saw somewhere, probably on Facebook, that there was a story that they were explaining that the, let's say, company commander of a unit would go and see his chaplain every week, and he would make sure that the troops knew that he was going to see the chaplain for counseling. And the counselor or the chaplain would talk to him one day and say, you know, you keep coming in here every week, but you don't talk about anything. You're just like bringing your workbook and you're working here instead of working in your office. Is there something you want to talk about? And the commander said, no, I just want to make sure that my troops know that this is a place that they can go if they need help. And if they see me doing it, they'll know that it's okay to do it. So is that kind of what you're You're saying that you're watching your platoon sergeant do it, you know, go through assistance, and you realize that it is okay.
Yeah, for sure. Like, you know, like I said, that just pride plays such a role in, like, as a barrier to going and seeking help. Like, I still remember sitting in my truck outside the vet center. Like, vet centers are, like, offshoots of the VA. I lived in Wichita, Kansas at that time. They only exist in metropolitan areas. But they're great resources. But nonetheless, I was sitting in my truck outside the vet center. That's where I was going to go get counseling, like, first time. And just, like, having this conversation out loud to myself, like, are you really going to go do this? And it was still, like, right there. I'm all by myself, and I still struggled taking the steps to go do that, you know?
Well, we're very grateful that you're talking about this so openly, and we hope that other people will hear it and realize it is okay. We have to remove
absolutely.
That stigma.
Absolutely. Seth, what helps you deal with your PTSD?
You know, I went through and I sought out counseling and stuff like that, and I learned a ton about myself through that process. And self-awareness is so incredibly important, and understanding not only like your, I don't know, I hate this word, but like triggers, right? Mm-hmm. But like understanding what kind of sends you to that place is important. I think what is much more important is to understand what you're feeling and when you're moving across the threshold of you're going to reach the point where you're not going to make good decisions, or you're going to reach the point where you're not in control anymore and taking yourself out of the situation. You know, it could be something as simple as, like, you know, like kids making too much noise or being in a large crowd, or, you know, like I got young kids, you know, and they run around and bang on pots and, you know, everything that young kids do. And, mm-hmm. you know, like, that's hard. Like, that sparks it for me sometimes in my chest, and I can feel it. And, like, I have to know, like, it's easy to think that I'm fine. I'm going to be in control. I'm going to do this. And, you know what? Like, if it keeps growing, you're not going to be in control. And, like, you're going to turn around, you're going to yell at your kids in a way that you shouldn't because of it. And, you know, so it's understanding how you're feeling and understanding, you know, when you're going to cross that threshold, you need to take yourself out of that situation. To be honest with me, like, my faith has helped me a lot. That's not for everyone, but it's definitely has helped me. Just finding, believing in a bigger power and things of that nature has helped me in my journey a long way. Talking with my spouse, you know, like, those are conversations that you don't want to have a lot of time. But having open, honest communication, we've been dealing with this. My spouse is a combat veteran too, you know? And it's still hard to have these conversations with her. But every time I do, every time I'm just forefront and honest with what I'm feeling and why, like, it's always better. Every time it's better. You know, more communication is a good thing.
For sure. I'm going to skip ahead a couple of steps because I know we've covered quite a bit of information, but how long did it take you to find a mental health care professional that's a good fit for you? Was it close by? Did you have to try a couple of them, or did you find somebody that worked right away?
So, like I said, you know, I lived in Wichita, Kansas, the big city. And so I had, like, there's a full VA hospital there. And like I said, they had vet centers there. When I started, I actually went to group counseling. And that did not work for me. Because of my work schedule, the only time I could go, like, I was sitting at a table with all Vietnam veterans. And so those were all men that were at a very, very different stage in their life than what I was. And so it just, like, it was comparing apples and oranges, right? I'm in the same place they were in 30 years ago. And so the, like, what I'm confronted with, like, dealing with young kids and sleepless nights and, you know, early career woes and things of that nature is maybe things they were dealing with a long time ago. And so it just didn't work for me. You know, every once in a while, an OEFOIF veteran would be there. And that was great because we could really connect, but I could never rely on that. So I ended up going for one-on-one counseling, and, like, the first 401 counselor I went to at the vet center, he was great. You know, and I went there pretty often, you know, a couple times a week for about 6 months, and it was really, really beneficial.
Good, 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 good. Seth, have you ever used telecare or computer-based care? Is that an option for you?
It is an option for me. I've tried it once, and it wasn't for me. Okay. I think if that's an option for people, they should always pursue it, because something's better than nothing. It wasn't for me, but that's just me, right?
Right.
When did you become a first sergeant? As far as, like, do you think that you already had PTSD when you were a first sergeant?
Yeah, you know, like, I didn't get promoted to the rank of first sergeant till 2013, I think. So, you know, I had already went through several levels of leadership, stuff like that. I already went through, I don't know, like, there's lots of ups and downs. I'm sure I have more of those in front of me. But I went through some pretty dark times and came out on the other side by the time I was the first sergeant. And so, but, you know, I didn't, like, really start talking about this or telling the story until even after I was out. You know, I didn't publish these books until after I'd already gotten out of the military. And that's something I actually kind of regret, because I think, you know, I've had a lot of my former soldiers reach out to me since I published these books to talk about this stuff. And I think that, you know, as a first sergeant, I had a platform that I could have used to help people that were kind of struggling the same way. And, you know, I think I was afraid to do it. You know, I was afraid the stigma would have hurt my career. Whether that's valid or not, I don't know. I was afraid to admit that I was having a problem still. And so I very purposefully waited until I retired to publish this book. Looking back, I wish I would have done that differently.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned the book, because that's going to lead me into my next question. You just told us when you wrote them. How have they been able to help you and your family, and do you plan on adding any more to the series?
I guess the first question, how has it helped my family? You know, I wrote this book for my kids. I probably could have done a better job and wrote it in a more general way, but I wanted to write it for my kids.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been something that's been really good. I think that it's given my kids some perspective that they wouldn't have otherwise had. This book isn't something that it's not the be-all and all to fix PTSD and families or anything like that, but I do think it's good enough to start conversations. And, you know, it's given my kids an understanding of kind of where I'm at. My oldest daughter, now she was 6 when I wrote the book. My youngest is 6 now. She was 2 when I wrote the book. So, you know, like, she's just kind of starting to understand this. I think my oldest daughter understands it a lot, you know. And I remember when she was 6, like I said, when I wrote the book, and I didn't read this to her until, like, I remember it was the first proof that I got from the publisher. So I had, like, a physical book to show her, and that's the first time I actually read it to her. And, you know, I referenced PTSD as being a fire inside my chest. And she just sat on my lap, and I read her this book, and she gave me a hug, and she said, "I'm sorry you have a fire in your chest, Dad." And, you know, I'll carry that with me forever.
That's very sweet.
And, you know, asking about writing another book, I don't know. I think that I had thought about that. I originally had considered trying to move forward with this. I'm not a writer, so that's probably a problem. I don't see myself as really doing any other books. I had a story that I wanted to tell, and I was able to do that. So I'm pretty happy with just having out there what I have out there. I worked on some other things to help the veteran community in some different ways.
Okay. All right. Seth, do you make use of any online support groups? For instance, on Facebook, I know that there are quite a few PTSD groups that, you know, everybody kind of chimes in and supports each other and gives advice or things like that. Are you online with any of those?
Yeah, you know, I am online with a number of different veterans groups, stuff like that. I probably don't interact with them. brought this up because I probably should. I should do more to take care of my mental health. You know, I went through when I was in a really bad time and I sought out treatment and I went through and I did that a lot and it kind of tapered off. But the thing about mental health, the thing about PTSD is, you know, this is something that never goes away. It's not like, boy, I was struggling, but then I got a treatment, now everything's great. Mm-hmm. You know, like, this is something that's going to be with you forever, that you're going to have to manage forever. And that's something that I definitely don't do a good job with. And seeking continual treatment, like, I know it's something I could benefit from, and I think that it's something that probably everyone could. It's not about, it doesn't have to be going in and digging up all this junk in your past. Though if that is, that can be helpful. It can just be going in and processing what's going in your life today or the last week or the last month. And that's extremely helpful. And that's something that I know I need to do a better job of. And I would encourage everyone to really stay on top of it.
Okay. Thank you. So that sounds like good advice for anybody that might be feeling PTSD in their life to continually look for some type of resolution. And since you'll never, I guess it's kind of like AA or any of those where it's a constant battle. And in order to maintain a good, healthy, personality, you might need a tweak now and then, right?
Yeah, for sure. I think that's something probably everyone, whether they're struggling with trauma or not, should probably benefit from.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Seth, how can our listeners learn more about you, or where can they purchase your book? You want to give out that information? We'll gladly add it.
Yeah, for sure. So you can purchase the book on my website, which is www.castlebook.com, and that's Castle with a K. Or they can pick up the book on Amazon.
Okay, great. And would you like to also have people contact you on your Facebook or Pinterest or any of those links?
You know, Chatbook actually has its own Facebook page. So okay. They can actually reach out to me through Chatbook as well.
Okay, great. Super. Well, thank you very much again for your service. And thank you for taking the time to speak with us today.
Hey, thank you guys so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
All right. Well, if that's going to do it for this week's interview, and if you have any questions or comments related to today's show, you can contact us at podcastdx@yahoo.com, through our website, podcastdx.com, on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, or Instagram.
And as always, please keep in mind that this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regime, and never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you have heard on this podcast.
Till next week.